Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Space Game Junkie podcast. I think this is episode 10, 11. I can't keep track. It's May 1st. It's May Day. That's when we're recording this. And I am Brian, as you know, and I am, as always, joined by my awesome co-host, Jim. Hi, Jim.
May the 4th be with you.
Oh, it's not that time yet. It's too early for that.
3 days.
3 days. And we have a fabulous guest this week. We actually changed our recording night just so he could join us. Please welcome former gaming journalist and now person at Microsoft, Denny Atkin.
Hello, guys.
Denny, remind me, what do you do at Microsoft again? I forget.
Nowadays, I work on the Xbox dashboard.
Oh,
so,
sorry.
Brian, if you had an Xbox, you would understand that when you turn it on, you get to see what new games are out and what events are going on, things like that. But, you know.
Since the latest Star Trek, quote-unquote, game just came out, and the movie's not too far away, I thought we'd kind of go through the highs and lows of Star Trek gaming, because I've been wanting to do this for a while, because there are few franchises, I think, in gaming that are more hilariously inconsistent than Star Trek.
That is true. You know, I realize that the best Star Trek games are not actually Star Trek games.
So, for example,
Artemis, the bridge simulator.
It's
by far the ultimate. It is the dream Star Trek game, but you know, you can do everything Star Trek-y with it, except it's not a licensed named property.
I feel horrible. I've not been able to get a group together to play that.
It is a lot of total geeky fun.
That's what I've heard.
How many people do you need to play that? Because it's like,
you can have fun with three. It's great if you can get five or six.
Is six the max?
It's the max before people end up with redundant jobs.
Yeah, because like there's the captain, which gives the orders, but there's also what? Helm and weapons and science and engineering.
Yeah. Engineering, communication.
And communication, yes.
Yeah.
I like how an artist, all those jobs have useful roles. Which is great. Like, you'd think communication, that's boring, but it's not, apparently, because there's stuff to do when you're in the communication.
Like scream for help.
Yeah, exactly.
So Denny, before we launch into this fantastic voyage that we're about to have, okay. I wanted to cover a little bit of your history, though, because
sure.
For people that don't know who you are and how far back the way back goes, right? Yeah. So what was your first writing gig?
Well, I am a very old person, so I started out writing about the Commodore Amiga when I was in college.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I had a column for Amiga World magazine, and then post-college, I ended up at Compute magazine, which the old farts in the crowd will remember used to have type-in programs for the Commodore 64.
Yes.
Yeah, I came in a little bit after that era, but that was my first full-time gaming journalism gig. And then I worked at Omni magazine for a little while, took a little detour off into science, and then went to Computer Gaming World in its golden age under Johnny Wilson. Jeff Green was there, all those guys.
Those are the days, man. I have to be honest, I think that's when I first saw you in print, was when you were at CGM.
I was the flight sim columnist. They used to make airplanes.
I know, and that's why I read your stuff, because that's like my second gaming love behind space games is flight sims. So I'm all over that stuff, man. Well,
where did you write your flight sim columns at? It was Computer Gaming World.
Yeah.
And
I went from,
did you ever,
oh, I'm sorry. I went from Computer Gaming World to Computer Game Strategy Plus,
which is where you and I crossed paths back then.
Yeah. So, Steve Ballman, kind of needed a break. And so I took over as editor and I did that for about a year. And that was a fun gig, and I took the flight sim column over there.
It's relevant to the Trek thing, because I got hired at Computer Game Strategy Plus because of the review that I wrote about Starfleet Academy. So yeah. But anyway, so you took over Bauman's thing for about a year, and were you still freelancing, or were you just full-time editor?
Yeah, no, I was a full-time editor, living up and working in the old underwear factory in Vermont, where Strategy Plus was based.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
It was a haunted underwear factory.
Ah,
that's Vermont for you.
Those are the days.
Yep.
Where are you from originally?
Wandering nomad. I grew up in the Southeast, but I've lived pretty much everywhere at some point or another.
Yeah, were you like military kid or something, or you just moved on your own?
Grocery business. It was even worse.
Really?
Yep.
Now, why is that?
My stepdad used to take failing grocery store chains and fix them, and he was really good at it. So he would do it in about a year, and then they'd ship us off somewhere else.
That sounds like a strangely useful position.
Yeah. Fairly unique, too.
Yeah. I love hearing about jobs like that. Like, you never hear about them, but they're, like, useful in their own little way. Yeah.
So basically what we've established here is that every publication that you've ever touched has died.
Oh, that's not fair.
So you have the kiss of death.
No. Publications are dying, and we're dying in general.
I've written for Wired. I've written for Entertainment Weekly, airline magazines. Those guys are still around.
Airline magazines.
It's only if they hire me full time that they die.
Is official Xbox magazine still kicking?
Yes, they are.
Is it?
Yes, there? Yep.
Oh, okay, because that's where you were before you actually started working on the Xbox stuff directly, right? Is were you the editor there?
No, I've done a couple columns for them, but I never worked for them.
Oh, okay.
So now I went from computer games to editing Handheld Computing, which was a magazine for something called a Palm Pilot, another historical relic.
I had a handspring visor at the time. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Yep, I have a giant box full of springboard cartridges for those in my garage.
Oh, those are the best, man.
Yep. And then I ended up at Microsoft. Yeah.
You've been there for a while, too, right?
Yeah, started here in 2004, worked on Windows for a couple of years, and then decided I missed gaming and came over to work on the Xbox and having fun ever since.
That's very cool that they let you. What can you tell us about the 720? Anything?
The what?
Yeah, I thought so.
You know what's actually shocking is that Nintendo has nothing this year. They're not doing a press conference.
Well, they blew their wad with the Wii U late last year. So
yeah, I thought that was interesting. I think since they'd already launched their console, and with the PlayStation 4 having been announced, and just decided that. they didn't want to get lost in the noise, is my guess.
Well, I'm seeing a serious problem for them. Like, I'm actually quite concerned for their company because they have the 3DS, and there are maybe three games that I have any interest at all on that platform, and they're all Mario games. And then they've got the Wii U, and I haven't found a single thing that I would want on that.
You're not interested in that zombie game that apparently is the system seller?
That's like the only game, and I'm zombied out. I'm over it.
Yeah, but they have their properties. You know, they've got the Zelda, they've got the Mario, and all that stuff, and the people love that. So
and that stuff,
but they need to have that stuff ready on launch day. Mm. Or if you launch a console or a handheld that doesn't have any software, nobody's going to buy it.
Yeah.
And. Yeah,
and I think they'll pick up. I also think that the naming was unfortunate. I think that a lot of the people who aren't heavily into, you know, watching the gaming industry don't understand that it's not just an enhanced Wii or an add-on for a Wii.
Did you guys see, I think it might have been on Polygon yesterday, that people with Wiis that are connected to the internet are now getting messages that they should upgrade to a Wii U. It's like going right to their system. Yeah, they're just like putting it right there.
No, but I did see an article today where there's a firmware hack that lets you load games off a USB drive on a Wii U now.
Oh.
So that they're totally wide open to the Pirate Bay now.
That's not good.
Yeah. So there's that. Yeah. So Star Trek games.
Yeah.
I think we've come up to the present. But I made this big long list. And then you were like, oh, but it doesn't have all the non-canon games, right? So I've got a list of the canon ones that start in 1985 up until 2010, because I don't have the latest 2013 Heartbreak on there.
Jim, what's your review of that latest Star Trek game again? How'd that go?
The latest Star Trek game is definitely not Aliens Colonial Marines.
Wow.
It's a competent game. It's not a particularly engaging game for a Star Trek title, as we will find out as we go through these. It is on the medium to high side of decency.
Well,
It's no 25th anniversary.
Well,
but
what
it's definitely better than Klingon Honor Guard.
That one I never played. But let's start at the beginning. What were the first Star Trek games you guys played?
The very first one I played was, once again, dating myself, on the Commodore PET, which was, and I believe it was on a unit with 8K of RAM. Wow. It was called Super Star Trek, and it's a game that if you go through the about first 10 years of Star Trek, about 70% of the games are based on this design.
Which
is the grid where you scan nearby regions, and it'll tell you how many star bases and how many ships are there.
Oh, it's
and
a then great you, game.
Then you warp in, and if I remember right, it's just a matter of like guessing angles to fire at the bad guys.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it uses the Numera keypad for relative aiming. So like, if they're like 11 o'clock off, you know, if the Klingon ship you want to fire at, it's like 11 o'clock, you use the 7 key or something, and it's crazy, but it's awesome. I actually reviewed it for my site a while back, and it's still a lot of fun. Surprisingly,
it's like the mirror universe version of Parker Brothers Battleship.
It's like the rough version of Starfleet by Interstellar?
That was
kind of the same game, if I recall.
Yeah, except for that you were fighting the Klarnons because they didn't have the license.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That was a great game, though. But I'm actually playing – the first one I ever played that I remember was Super Star Trek, or was that variant. That was the first one I ever played. It was like on a TRS-80 back in the day. But the first one I ever spent time with was the first text adventure, which was the Kobayashi Alternative.
That was a great game.
That was a fabulous game.
Yeah, that one was floating around the computer lab in high school. That was 1985 that one came out.
Yeah. And
it was closely followed by Promethean Prophecy,
which was the same engine and everything, just a different plot. But it still worked because those games, like, they let you walk all around the Enterprise. They let you beam down to planets. It wasn't all about combat. You know, those games were fabulous because they used your imagination.
Did you have to, like, stick a babelfish in your ear?
No.
And then...
No. But, you know, you still had to do stuff like, you know, talk to Spock, if I recall. I think go ahead.
What was the parser like? I mean, was it an Infocom-ish style? Like,
I can't remember. I think it was a little more streamlined than that. I don't remember it being as basic as an Infocom parser. You want to talk about basic. Yeah. The game I'm playing right now, it's called Trek 73. It came out even before... the Super Star Trek type games. And we talked about it a little last week, but I played a little more of it. It's crazy complicated.
That one actually literally predates personal computers.
People
played that on mainframes first.
That's on mainframes. And that, like, I think I have to print out when was the last time anybody did this? Print out the keyboard commands, for Christ's sake. When's the last time anybody did that? But I think I have to do that for this game because it's like, two is lock phasers, and then you have to, like, which phaser bank, and then which target, and you have to actually type out the name of the target. You can't, like, select from a list. So if, like, it's some crazy name and you misspell it,
this is before the invention of menus.
Basically. I mean, there was kind of a menu, but it's still all number and text-based, and it is so obtuse. Like, I'm trying to approach it like I would if I was in 1973, like, oh my god, this is awesome. But I was just born in 1973, so that's kind of tough. But that game is crazy. But yeah, there was like, that's all there was in like space gaming for like 10 years or 20 years. Like between Space War in 62 and maybe the late 70s, all you had was like Star Trek games. That's pretty much until like maybe Space Invaders and stuff. Okay. It was like all Star Trek games.
Well, that was like the only recognizable property, right?
Yeah.
Before the Lucasverse came about.
Exactly.
So in 1988, Simon & Schuster Interactive put out a game from Micro Mosaics that was called Star Trek First Contact.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was another text adventure, if I recall.
Yeah, but that had some rudimentary graphics to it.
Yeah, it did.
What's amazing, looking at the screenshots of this,
yeah,
it reminds me of why early PC gaming was putrid, is because you have this vibrant blue, like, and then the hot pink. Yeah. Right? Everything was baby blue and fuchsia.
Oh, CGA.
Or black.
CGA
or white.
Graphics. Yeah, I was a hardcore Amiga nerd in those days. I would just thumb my nose up at that stuff.
Oh, yeah, you probably totally scoffed at us DOS gamers back then.
4,096 colors, kids.
I actually can't wait to go through some of the Amiga games I didn't play back in the day, because I'm going through them all the space games. And
Just Amiga stuff in general was great, but like the first time you crack open DigiPaint, and it was just like, oh my god, look at the palette. I can't believe this exists. And they sold it with that picture of King Tut's, you know, the sarcophagus rendered in DigiPaint, which would be some really low-res crappy stuff now, but back then it was just mind-blowing. Amazing, yeah. And, you know, the first time that I think that I ever saw really good graphics on a PC was when Chris Roberts put Wing Commander out on the shelf. And I walked by and that caught my eye, and it was like, whoa, the game has changed.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, before that, the graphical fidelity on the on DOS machines wasn't that big a deal.
Yeah, we eventually got to EGA, where you could have have red faces. There was still no flesh tone.
16 whole colors.
Yep.
Oh my god. Oh, those were the days, man. Those were the days when every planet was green or brown or white.
So the first Trek game that I remember playing was actually on the Amiga, but the first place that I saw it was on the Atari ST. And that was Star Trek Rebel Universe.
Oh, no.
Which was a pretty rudimentary game.
Oh, no. Not that one. That one's terrible.
It was not good.
Oh, because, no, that one tried to be pure graphical.
Yeah.
And it was terrible.
Denny, do you remember that game, the Star Trek one, that was kind of like that, but Tobias Richter did the graphics, I know, maybe the game entirely that he did, but it was a Starfleet game. And it was kind of like a remake of Rebel Universe, but it was actually pretty and on the Amiga.
Yeah, I think I missed that one, sad to say.
I'm looking at the screenshots for Rebel Universe, and I'm just feeling wretched, because I was really excited about this game at the time. Because, like, ooh, it's all graphical. I'll be able to, like, do stuff on the consoles and stuff, and it was just so bad.
Yeah. Oh, this is kind of amazing, actually. So I looked up Tobias Richter. I'm like, what is this guy doing now? He's still rendering high-res Enterprises these days. Huh. But he did when the 2009 movie was coming out, and they had, like, those fan renders, the initial wave of them that came out, and they were, like, perfect renders of the new ship when everybody was like, oh, God, what's the new ship going to look like? That was him.
Oh.
Yep. His official title is German Special Effects Guru.
Nice.
I think that's what his business card says. So there you have it.
Oh,
so wow. from what, when was that? Like 1991, I think, thereabouts, until present day. He's still at it.
Good for him. Do what you love.
Yeah. Wow. So let's see. There was another DOS game. It was the Transinium Challenge.
Ooh.
That is one of Brian's favorite games.
No, it's not. No. See, I bought... That was the first Next Generation game, and I was all excited because, ooh, Next Generation. I love Next Generation. And it
consisted mostly of black and white silhouettes of them turning to look at each other,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a lot of that, and there were, like, but when you, like, told the ship to go somewhere, it would show that cutscene of the Emperor's going whoosh, and, like, that was it. And, like, there were, like, rudimentary, like, helm and combat controls, but it was just a terrible game.
Yeah, well, that was one of those Prentice Hall games. And, you know, Simon & Schuster did the early games in Prentice Hall. And, you know, all the book publishers, I think, thought they were going to get into the software industry. And they proved as software developers who are really good book publishers.
Exactly. I mean, God, what was that one game they did? I'm shooting forward a little bit, but it was Starship Creator. And most of the quote-unquote game was building a starship.
Yeah,
and
it sounded like such a wonderful idea, but there was
no
game there.
It was a great idea, but there was no game there. It would put you up against some stupid missions, and, like, you didn't do anything. It was just – it was kind of like the early version of Gratuitous Space Battles, where you'd build a ship and just throw it out there. But it wasn't even fun. It was even a good game. But, God,
it was – ugh. I guess it's just the joy of let's bolt Starship components together and then save it as a screenshot. That was about as far as it went.
I'll be honest. I think one of the better games I played in the 80s that was Star Trek was actually not officially Star Trek. It's Begin. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Starship. Well, that's another one based on that same grid-based Fight the Klingons design.
But, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it was so good.
That one was really good. I think Starfleet 1 was probably the accumulation of that one, of that design. But.
Yeah, no, that was that and EGA Trek, I think, were the hype, were they like the pinnacles of that design.
Yeah.
But remember Starfleet 2?
Remember that one? Yeah, if you were one of the lucky people who got the patch in the 3 weeks between when it came out and when Interstellar went out of business,
it actually turned
into a decent game. But,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad because it had so much potential.
Yeah, it's out there on the internet now. The guy who developed it put it out there as freeware.
Really?
And you can find the game, and I'll get you the link. You can get the latest patch version that where everything actually works.
Ooh.
And then you'll just wish you could go back to the time when your standards of graphics and interface would let you play a game like that, because you would have really enjoyed it then.
Dude, like I said, I'm going through all of it. I mean, I'm playing Trek 73 now. I was just playing, was it Space One from 1977 or 78 for the Apple II? So.
But I feel that pain, bro. It's like Brian has dragged me through the trenches of some games that are so old. And it was, what's the one that mates up with Breach and I can never remember the name of?
Rules of Engagement, which might as well be a Star Trek game. I mean, you know, it looks so much like the Lacars system on next gen that it might as well be a Star Trek game.
Yeah.
But that and Starflight are like interfaces of pure masochism.
But they're fabulous games. That's the thing. They're so, so fabulous. They still hold up, I think, but I'm crazy. I'm ridiculously crazy.
Why doesn't anybody put that out on Xbox Live?
What?
You know, the XBLA, the arcade. Just somebody could do a remake of a game like that and stick it out there. It wouldn't have to be like super high fidelity, right? Just make it work with an Xbox controller, stick it up on the store, and make a lot of people happy.
Yeah, well, there's the Indie Games channel for that kind of stuff, but. Yeah, you got to have a demand bigger than the three of us, I think, might be the problem there.
Well, there's that. We have to get the word out.
Yes.
We have to Kickstarter a Kickstarter. It's like if we raise enough money, we can pay somebody to start a Kickstarter. Anyway. Okay, then the greatest of the DOS era games, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
You know what? That game wasn't horrible. It wasn't great, but... It was.
It may be one of the only cases in history where the game was better than the movie.
Yes.
You know what? Yes, you're absolutely right. I was just going in that direction, but you are absolutely right because, wow, that movie.
So the only good thing that actually came of that movie was I was at a con and they were doing the cosplay stuff, right? And there was one guy that was dressed up as Cybok.
No.
They were like, And they were trying to find him because it was time for to announce the judging at the contest, and the guy gets up on stage and he's like, "Does anybody know where Cybok is?" And about 20 people yelled, "He's with God," and the laugh. And that's like the only positive experience that I've had in connection with that movie. There you have it.
Well, it did have David Warner, so that was something.
Was Warner in Five? Oh, yes,
yeah,
he was.
Gosh. He was the human hostage. He was the human hostage.
He was a hostage in that movie.
Yes, in more ways than one.
Yeah, that's a good way to...
Interesting that he came back for Undiscovered Country.
Yeah, well, he had to redeem himself.
It's just a better movie. So
He had to pre-drink before that one, I bet, to just get his nerve.
Well, everyone needs a house payment now and again.
That's true.
But... Yeah, there were some there. I'm looking at this list here on TrekCore.com, which is a very nice list, which I might have to use to flesh out my own because I think I missed some of these. But like, there are some Trek games here I never played, like New Trek, Super Trek, Star Wreck, Trek Trivia. Yeah, I never played some of these. What about you guys? Did you play some of these at all?
Well, what was the Star Trek game where it was multiplayer? And it's an old game, though. It's been around for a while. But you basically fly the ship in a top-down view, and you go planet to planet, and you can beam crew up and down and do things, and then just shoot at people. And it's kind of it's a very basic game. It's damn near like Asteroids, but with Fed ships and Klingons.
I'm not remembering this at all.
I remember playing this thing. It was a DOS game, like back when dial-up was like the new hotness.
Maybe it's
Star Trek. I'm just wondering if that was on the list.
Maybe it's Star Trek Flucht in Paradies, whatever this German thing is from 1985.
Yeah. Or it was a really awesome dream you had, Jim.
Yeah.
No, that's Star Quebec. The Frenchening.
Yeah, there were a lot of Trek games here in the 80s that I've never even heard of, like Star Trek Evolution and some of these. So it might be one of these, you know.
Well, the Trek Core list has a lot of hobbyist garage games in there, because there's Star Trek El Dulo, Star Trek Bada Bing Bada Bang.
Where are you seeing this?
That's up in the 2000s. Borg Nukem.
What? Okay, well, the 2000s, that doesn't count, really. Well, no, kind of, maybe. No, sort of. Well, it does. I guess the early 2000s. But the 90s had a good start, I guess, because, 25th anniversary. Holy shit. That game is amazing.
It was awesome. What's amusing about it, though, is because of the limited resolution of the graphics, it was basically like playing a really well-written Star Trek script, but with everything acted out by Playmobil characters.
Yeah, but you didn't mind that, because it was just such a good story, and the gameplay was fantastic. And even that the kind of rudimentary starship combat thing was awesome. I loved that. I don't know why. It was stupid, but I loved it.
No. You made me on like 8 floppies.
It took over an install.
You made me think of a totally missed opportunity that I don't know why nobody's done yet, but Lego Star Trek.
I would buy that on every platform I own.
I would too. I mean, I made so many Enterprises out of Legos back in the day that just makes total sense. Absolutely.
Yeah, I guess it's just because the licensing between Lego and Star Trek and Star Wars and
Lord of the Rings and Batman, the kits that are out around the new movie, it would be Creo Star Trek.
Oh God, really?
Yeah, which would mean, of course, while you're playing, your character would fall apart in the middle of walking across the room.
Oh no! And it's kind of funny because the girlfriend's here tonight and she's watching Deep Space Nine on Netflix as we talk about Star Trek. So I think it's kind of funny. But the 90s.
Yeah. So the next official canon is, I think, arguably the best. Well, the pair of them. We'll just take them as the two as one. Is 25th anniversary in 92, and then Judgment Rites the next year in 93 from Interplay. I will throw in that those are the two best Star Trek things that have ever been.
I might have to counter with a Starfleet Academy on that one.
Whoa.
No.
He's made that mistake before. He means Bridge Commander.
No. If I was going to counter.
What I actually was saying was Starfleet Command is what I meant to say.
Yes.
Oh, Starfleet Command.
Yes. That's what I was going to counter with, because I think, especially number two, Orion Pirates, I think that's pretty much the pinnacle of Star Trek gaming.
Well, I will say that it is, if you're playing multiplayer, it is the best, because you're just doing skirmishes. But if you actually try to play through a campaign in that, Taldron just never got their shit together about having any kind of a single player component.
I actually love the single player in those games. I'm not much of a multiplayer person at all. But going back to the Judgment Rites / 25th anniversary, I think what the beauty of those games were is that they showed the potential for what a Star Trek game could be.
It could be more than
combat. It could be more than just a bad script. You know, I mean, if someone actually took some care in writing a story.
Well, aside from the what's going to put a tear in your eye whenever I say the secret of Vulcan Fury, right? That I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Judgment Rites is the last time that the original cast actually did a voice work together of an episode of any kind of Star
Trek. I believe you're right,
because
DeForest Kelly, I think, passed shortly after that.
Yeah.
So aside from somebody somewhere is sitting on all that voice work from Secret of Vulcan Fury.
I would hope so. I would hope no, someone would just not throw that out.
So Interplay, when Interplay flopped over, was there a list of who got what properties? Because we just watched THQ Meltdown and saw the auctioning of the different components, right, where they got cut up and sold. And that was pretty much on the record of who got what properties and stuff.
The confusing thing about Interplay is I don't think they ever really fully died.
Interplay just still exists. They were just having a little tiff with Bethesda about the Fallout rights just last year.
Yeah, they just disappeared for a while, but they never really died. So unlike THQ, which at this point has died, sadly, Interplay is still kind of sort of around.
But does Interplay exist as like a folder on somebody's desk? That's all that's left of them now?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of guys in rented office at this point. But they are working on a MMO. They have been for a number of years.
Oh, that's interesting.
Fallout MMO, if I'm remembering?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a Fallout MMO, but you'd have to check the interwebs for the details. But there was some question about which rights they sold to Bethesda and how much of what Bethesda did they could incorporate. And lawyers are making more money than anybody in the gaming industry on it at this point, I think.
Well, Jim and I were talking about this earlier. It's like, since Good Old Games has much of the Interplay catalog, it's surprising that they don't have, you know, these two games. And it makes you wonder where the other Star Trek games are, because I don't think there are really any Star Trek games on digital distribution besides Star Trek Online.
I'm sure that's to do with the fact that you would also have to get the license from Paramount to put them back out, and that's probably prohibitively expensive.
You think so? Because I would think if someone puts the Starfleet Command games and the Starfleet Star Trek Armada games, at least, I would think those would sell fairly well at like $10 a pop.
Well, I had always found that it was kind of interesting and odd that the way that Paramount would dole out the Trek license, right? So they would hand, like, to Taldron, they said, okay, you guys have the original series Trek license, but the next generation Trek license is going to Activision, right? Back
when
Raven was doing the games. And then the license for this show is going to go to EA. And then, so it was like they chopped it up by generation and then by show within the generation and who got to do what. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of weird. So it was. And with like Star Trek Online, they have the next generation stuff, but they can't go back and touch any of the original series because that's still tied up somewhere else. And now I wonder, now that J.J. Abrams has split the multiverse, right, like who gets that? And because I was the thing that I was thinking, we'll jump ahead to the end of the night of the 2013 game, right? Is I was thinking, like, for everything that that game is, if they had just been able to license the Mass Effect engine and do a Mass Effect game under the official Star Trek canon, wow, that would have been awesome.
I'm sorry, that's still stupid because Star Trek is not a cover-based shooter role playing. I don't know.
You haven't played the 2013 Star Trek game, obviously, because apparently it is now.
No,
it is. But it was the thing they tried to give the appearance of, like, this is just like Mass Effect in all their advertising.
Really?
And it's like, no, it's not, because it's a really weak cover based shooter. It's frustrating the way the controls are. And then as far as they put the space shooty stuff in there as kind of an afterthought. It's a turret thing, and you have just like weak little guns that go pew 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 pew, and it's oh god.
You showed me that video, Jim. I shed a tear. That space shooty part. That's so I had more fun with the turret part in Knights of the Old Republic, which wasn't great, but it was more fun than that looked.
Right, but if they had made a Star Trek like bio or a BioWare like Star Trek game, okay. Where it could have been very heavy narrative. It could have been pick who's going on your away team, right? Mm-hmm. And then you could fly the Enterprise around a map and scan planets and all those elements that are there in Mass Effect, except Space Cthulhu's coming from beyond the pale. But other than that, well, those
spoiler,
are the Borg in Star Trek.
Spoiler,
right?
Dude.
But anyway I just think that the license could have been much better served in anything but what they did. And whenever you say, well, a licensed property can't be done justice, then I point you to the Fall of Cybertron and say that is the prime example of a license being done right.
Or the recent Batman games, which are...
Or the recent Batman games, yeah.
Excellent. So there are examples of a license being done right, but it sounds like this latest Trek game is not one of those examples.
No, and it hurts me because they did, in some places, do such a wonderful job of it. As far as, like, the environments themselves look really killer. You know, it's like, wow, this is, I'm seeing the bridge of the Enterprise, and I can run around on it, and this is, like, the part that you can't see for all the lens flare in the film, so I can kind of make this out now.
Yeah, I've had friends ask me about the game, and basically my answer is, if you are a Trekkie, if you're a Trek nut, it's worth playing. In my opinion, the shooter stuff, like if you're playing it pure as a pure shooter, there's definitely much better stuff out there. And yeah, Star Trek isn't necessarily a shooter in how it should be set up. But the fact is the environments, the general storyline and everything, it does feel Star Trek. It feels Star Trek. Mm-hmm. It feels new Star Trek, you know, the movie era where everything's a lot more action packed.
I'll probably get it when it comes on a Steam sale for like $9.99 or something.
Would you say the advice on this one is like I've been saying about a lot of games, BioShock, you know, lately, is just turn it down to the easiest combat difficulty and cruise through it because you want the experience. You don't necessarily want a challenge out of this thing.
Yeah, I'm playing it on medium and I'm not dying much, and I think that's a good way. I certainly wouldn't want to put it into hardcore mode and.
Yeah, well, I'm finding that the game on medium is like boringly easy until you hit a difficulty wall. You know, like there'll be one particular sequence that's like makes me want to beat my keyboard, and then I'm over that, and then it's like back to sleep for another half hour.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah.
So back to the 90s, I guess. You know, I always wanted to walk around the Enterprise and all the Star Trek games, and the only game that really let me do that besides those text adventures was the freaking technical manual. Remember that thing?
Oh, yeah.
I loved
that. Was kind of fun. Yeah. That was an original Windows 95 property, right?
Yeah, it was like all full motion malarkey, and like you could like touch stuff and everything. I didn't, I guess, play it, but I spent a lot of time with it because I'm like, ooh, I can do this and I can touch things. Pretend.
Well, the 90s were, you know, being the big CD-ROM era, there were all of these Star Trek. There was like the Omnipedia.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I love the name of this one, the Star Trek Voyager Entertainment Utility, which is just, you know, anything was going to encompass how well everything was done around Voyager, it's that name.
Wow.
The word entertainment doesn't even deserve to be anywhere near Voyager. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, I'm with you there, Brian.
Oh, God.
Well, so that's an interesting point, though, because the 90s is whenever Hollywood actually got involved heavily in computer games. And I think that the reason that they did is because the CD-ROM came out and they saw full motion video.
Yep.
And they were like, oh, now video games are going to be movies. It's all interactive movies. Like that CDI thing really caught on, right? So do you know anybody that had one of those, a CDI player?
No.
Anyway, they had done a couple of movies that were basically, well, it was interactive Star Trek episodes. So there was 1996 had Star Trek Borg.
Ugh.
And that was where John DeLancey reprised his role as Q, and then came on the Enterprise and took you, and it was like you were like some ensign whose father had died at Wolf 459, and he teleports you back there and hands you, you know, like, here's your tricorder, here's your phaser, let's go. But it was a full motion video thing, and it would bring up a cursor on the screen, like the actors would look at you, like, make an assessment and look at you, and then you'd have to click left or right.
Really?
You know, it's like, do I click on the phaser or the tricorder? I will click the phaser, and then it would play out like another couple minutes of video.
I reviewed that, I had to finish it, and I had forgotten all about it. Thanks for bringing that memory back, Jim.
Well, there was also Star Trek Klingon around the same time, which wasn't that essentially the same thing?
It was, yeah, except that you were a Klingon.
Right.
But that didn't have John DeLancey in it to chew the scenery. No. For better or for worse. I think maybe it's a better experience for lack of...
Did you guys play this Harbinger game, the Space Nine Harbinger? Was that an adventure game or something?
It was. I remember that running...
It was a step-based thing. Do you remember... what was that game? It was Time Commando.
Yeah, Time Commando.
Or Was it that where it was like it was like you would have a it was almost like Myst. It was Star Trek Myst. Let's just put it that way because it was a pre-rendered scene, and then you would get arrows on the sides of the screen. You know, if you move the cursor, like oh, I can go this way, and it would jump forward 10 feet. Yeah, it was a dungeon experience in Star Trek.
I'll be honest. I didn't watch Deep Space Nine at the time, but now it's my favorite Trek, so I kind of want it just for that.
Learn to want it less.
Yeah.
So they made another game that was kind of like that. That was Star Trek Generations.
Oh, that was terrible. 97. Generations was god freaking.
Well, I just remember seeing the YouTube video. I've got that whole list of videos we're going to put up in the show notes. In the YouTube video where they're showing the end sequence of the game, and it's got Malcolm McDowell's character, the AI for that character, while he's monologuing at the end, is like running in circles around the room. It's hilarious.
Oh, no.
It's like a wind-up robot just bouncing off the walls and stuff, and it's just like, just tase him, put him out of his misery. Phasers on stun.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't finish a lot of games. I didn't even get anywhere near finishing that one.
I will say another great property that Interplay put out also in 97 was Star Trek Pinball.
Really?
Where they had a bunch of different, there was like a Kirk table and a Klingon table.
And it was good?
It was actually quite good.
Really?
It was, that was in like that second wave, because, you know, there was like the Bill Budge pinball construction set stuff back on the 64. So this would be the second great wave of computer pinball simulations, right? Where they had Pinball Dreams, and I don't know, this might have even been made by the Pinball Dreams guys. Yeah. But yeah, that was actually kind of decent. It bears watching the video.
Let's not forget Starfleet Academy. That's already been mentioned. Cause...
Oh, my. Well, the only good thing about Starfleet Academy is that Klingon Academy came out as a result.
That's true.
Yeah, Starfleet Academy, I always wanted a bridge simulator.
And, I did, too. Yeah. No, I was so excited about it. Yeah.
Well, and I talked to Interplay when they were first developing it about a year before it came out, and it was originally going to be much more of a hardcore bridge simulator, and it turned into, you know, a joystick game.
Which was terrible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you look at the time period that it came out right hot on the heels of Wing Commander 3 and 4.
Yeah.
And it was basically trying to be Paramount's Wing Commander 3 because it was full motion video movie intercut with game missions where you basically flew a starfighter.
And none of them were good. None of the missions weren't good. The fighting wasn't good. The movies were
Well, it's because they made the Enterprise feel like a starfighter.
Yeah.
That was the whole problem is it was a turn and burn, you know, hit your afterburners Enterprise.
I really wanted to throw my joystick at the screen. I really did because I was so excited about that one.
So tell me how Klingon Academy came and saved the day.
Have you ever played Klingon Academy?
I have played a little bit of it, but I want to hear you guys talk about it because you're quite passionate about it.
Well, we're skipping over a bunch of stuff. Do you want to get to it?
Well, it's the same. It's essentially the same.
We'll come back to those, but since it's in the series.
Okay. Klingon Academy is probably one of the most, I think, detailed capital ship simulators ever made. I mean, you still kind of use a joystick to move around your ship, but the ships are much more weighty now. They feel like capital ships. And you're not just like pointing a crosshair. You're like setting a target and you're shooting at that target. So like pulling a trigger would basically be telling your weapon officer to fire if you use your imagination.
So we're back to like the other week whenever we had our space games just chasing a dot on the radar.
Yeah, well this...
And that's essentially the problem is the original... The original Starfleet Academy was chasing a dot on the radar.
Yeah, but this one, you actually with Klingon Academy, you actually had to worry about facing with your shields and everything, and you had detailed commands for every station.
It felt like a Star Trek game. My problem, it didn't get me though because I didn't like playing the Klingons. I wanted to be Federation. Yeah,
you know what? That's fair. That's fair. But see, I don't love the Klingons, but I love David Warner and I love. The other guy, Christopher Lee, is that the other guy? I love him. So I mean, Six is my favorite movie, so I was all excited about that. But the gameplay was just fantastic. It had to do with a Klingon kind of civil war, if I recall. And like you'd move up from a bird of prey to like the big mega ships, and the combat was fantastic. And it was so detailed. It It's just
yeah. But let's not forget the best Klingon, Christopher Lloyd.
Yes.
Oh no. I love Christopher Lloyd. I absolutely love that actor, and he was just so wasted in
that. Well, that's the reason. Like when you guys say, "Oh, I don't really like the Klingons," I think it's because they have taken some unfortunate steps of hamming up the Klingons so many times. But if you take them at the base, like I played, I don't know, Denny, did you play a lot of Starfleet battles?
No.
Yeah. No? Okay, I played a lot, and I usually played in a Klingon D7. So I really got to like the way that the Klingons
that's
fought.
A nice,
and
that's a nice versatile ship if Starfleet Command is anything to go by. That's a good ship.
Well, you basically, the whole saber dance tactic, right, where you go in and you have to get close quick and then give them a 1-2 punch of, like, show them your right quarter, show them your left quarter, turn tail, dump photons, and get the hell out of there.
Right.
And it made for a really fluid thing, whereas, like, the Federation guys just, like, try to rotate shield facings around all the time, which, I mean, you played Starfleet Command. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, totally.
But it's like if you play against two people that have Klingon ships, it's a real bitch to kill them because, if they know how to play. So I kind of like that, and that's why I want to get into Klingon Academy. I cannot make the thing run on my machine. I'm running Windows 8. There's that forum out there, and people swear to God they can make it run. And, you know, there's, like, all kind of patches, and it makes it beautiful.
I would keep trying. I would keep trying because that is – I had this thing back in the day called Game Commander. It was, like, this voice command thing, and you could set it to do specific keystrokes when you said something.
Oh, yeah. I remember that thing.
This
– played a lot of Falcon with that.
That game – Starfleet Command – I mean, Klingon Academy was perfect for that because, like, instead of hitting 1 for your helmsman, 3 to set warp speed, 5 to set target or whatever, be like – set warp 5, and like boom, you would go. And it.
Oh, you mean you didn't put the keywords in the original Klingon?
No, I actually did.
What the
I
hell?
Actually
did have, you're a light.
I actually did have a Klingon dictionary for a time. I don't remember a lot of the language, but I keep threatening my girlfriend that I'm going to relearn it. So that every time she throws French at me, I'll throw Klingon at her. There's
a guy on his shelf of tech manuals. He's got the Klingon dictionary just like at random in the
middle. Oh, it's amazing how that whole language is just made from one guy's head. I just think that's fast. Kind of like Lord of the Rings. I just think that's fast.
Yeah.
But if you can get Klingon Academy to work, you need to keep trying because it is a really good game.
All right. Maybe I'll devote tomorrow to that. I'll let you guys know.
Yeah, good luck.
I'll put the plea out on their forums, like, help me.
Yeah, you should, because it's worth running. I mean, it's really great first person. I think it's a better bridge simulator than Bridge, what is it, Bridge Commander, Bridge something?
Yeah, Bridge Commander.
We'll get to that.
So the other game from that era that is definitely worth playing and probably, like, whatever it takes to get it to run is 1998 Star Trek The Game Show.
Seriously? Are you – what? You're joking. You're joking. Kidding.
Do you remember it?
I remember seeing it in the store. I never bought it, but I looked at it and I was like, what the hell is this? And then I walked away.
I think Denny at least played the magazine CD-ROM demo.
I think we somehow managed to not review this in Computer Gaming World. I don't know how we missed it, but
maybe they never sent you one.
It's the video that I caught from YouTube is like an hour-long playthrough of it.
Oh, wow.
And it's one of those. Have you ever played one of those like DVD board games?
Yeah, sure.
It's essentially that, and it's like a you don't know Jack kind of interactive movie experience thing, hosted of course with John DeLancey because he's the king of snark.
I want to play this now.
I kind of do too because I love John DeLancey.
Yeah, he is the host and the co-host because he spawns himself in female form and then argues with himself.
Wait,
the most awesome thing ever.
The 90s.
Don't delude yourself. It's pain. What's in the box? Pain. Pain is in the box.
Now, there was, what was that Klingon Honor Guard game I'm looking at the list?
Klingon Honor Guard was another one like the Borg. No, that was Star Trek Klingon. Then Klingon Honor Guard was an Unreal Engine.
Yeah, that was from Microprose of all people.
Yep.
And yeah, that was an Unreal shooter. It looked kind of stupid.
Yeah. Well, the deal was, and that also had a very heavy full motion video.
Was that Unreal? No, that couldn't have been Unreal. Unreal wasn't around
yet. Yeah, it was Unreal.
Was that Unreal around in 97?
Yeah, it was either the Unreal 1 engine or the Quake 3 engine.
I think it was Quake. I'll have to look, but I thought it was the Quake engine.
Okay, because I remember playing as that, and you had a Batla.
Yeah.
And the knight, the dagger, you know, you'd run around and just be like wrecking dudes with the Klingon dagger. And but it, the story is, I remember there was an assassination in the Klingon High Council, and Gowron took you aside, and they were like, "Well, you're the newest guy in the Honor Guard, so since you're the new guy, you can't be corrupt. So we're gonna send you around to wreck all these dudes." And yeah, and then you ended up somewhere. I just remember like running around inside of a Klingon ship, stabbing people, and yeah, it was very weird.
But yeah, yeah.
Not a pretty game. It has not aged well at all.
Yeah, well, it was MicroProse, but this was when MicroProse bought Spectrum Holobyte, which makes it make a little more sense if you're
because they did have the license. They did. They did a Final Unity, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was
Final Unity was pretty.
It
great,
was not
actually.
Bad. We skipped over that. Yeah, that was not a bad game.
That one was awesome because at the E3 party, I got to hang with Marina Sirtis for about 20 minutes. So
I am so jealous of you. Is she as hot as she looks on TV?
And she is so super nice, too. Yeah,
I've seen her at conventions. She's super duper nice, but I didn't see her until well after. But yeah, I didn't get that close to see if she was that hot.
So this, you have to remember, Denny, this is the man who had Sulu serenade him. Well,
he hasn't heard that story.
No, no,
tell us the story, Brian. No. Tell us.
I just told this to Jim today. Jim showed me like a video of Star Trek, and I'm sure you know that song, Danny. My second convention when I was like 11, the big star was George Takei. And I bought a copy of Star Trek and on vinyl, which I still have. And I don't know where I stopped caring about getting things signed, but at this time, this is like my second convention, and I was like, ooh, I should get this signed. So I take it right up to him, and I'm nervous as hell because I'm totally starstruck. And I'm 11. And, he's like, oh, I know this song, Star Trek, across the theater. He sings like half the song, like right there at the autograph table. And
oh,
like,
my.
Yeah, oh, my. And like some of the people in lines are singing with him and like gets an applause. And I'm just about to pee my pants because I'm like, oh, my God. But he signed it. He was very nice. But the best part about that story is I ran to him at a con like two or three years later, I think, in an elevator. And he remembered me.
Wow.
You know? Yeah, he remembered me. He's like, oh, I signed your album a while back. How's school? You know, what's going on? You know, do you like the new show? He's like super nice, like every time I met him. So that's my amazing George Takei story.
Awesome.
But how did we get on that?
Star Trek the Game Show.
Then
Harbinger.
So moving forward to 1999 very quickly.
Well, wait, no. We got the Starship Creator in 1988. Let's not skip that.
I thought we already said enough as much about that as we needed to. But,
well,
okay.
No, because that was – it was kind of fascinating. The best part about that, I spent a lot of time building my ships. Because, you know, if you're a spaceship nut like I am, that's the best part. It's like, ooh, let's put this power reactor here. And it was kind of cool for a while. And then you got to the mission part, and that ruined everything.
Yeah, there was nothing there.
There was nothing there. It was so sad because you wanted to see your ships, like, do something after you built them. And it was like, what is this?
Yep.
give me a game. I thought this was a game.
Yeah, it literally did not have the gameplay of Trek 73.
No, it didn't. Trek 73 actually has more gameplay than Starship. Oh, God.
Oh, gosh. So in 99, MicroProse, it was one of their last-ish games, too. It was Birth of the Federation.
Yeah, that's where I was headed.
I feel bad. I've never played.
It is a really odd game. Really? I liked it. It's a Star Trek 4X strategy game.
Right. It's very Master of Orion-ish, I'm told.
But as we were talking about licensing earlier, it's kind of supposed to be about the formation of the Federation. You're going around trying to recruit planets, that sort of thing. But they only had the TNG license.
What?
So they didn't have, you know, there were no original series ships. You were dealing with like the Cardassians and the Ferengi and stuff. What? Even though even though it's Birth of the Federation.
It was very much out of place.
What?
It was,
really?
But it was a good game.
Someone sent me a link to where you can download it now. Apparently it's...
Yeah, it's floating around most of the Abandonware sites.
Yeah, I keep meaning to try it because it's very expensive on eBay.
I've still got my original copy.
I would love to buy it if it wasn't like $50 on eBay, because my God, I'm dying for it.
Well, after the show, Denny's going to be logging into eBay trying to offload it.
No, do not sell your copy. Do not. It's a nice thing. But I know people who like that game, and I know people who can't stand that game. And it might be for the very reasons you guys are talking about.
It's one of those games, much like the new Star Trek game, that while you're playing it, you're thinking about every other game that it resembles that you would probably be better suited to play.
Mm.
So it's like, this is a lot like Master of Orion 2. Wow, what a great game Master of Orion 2 was.
Exactly.
I should stop this and go play that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because the Star Trek universe would be really well suited for a good 4X game, you would think.
Yeah.
Like, I was playing a Star Trek next-gen mod for Distant Worlds a little while back, and it was beautiful. It was fantastic. It worked perfectly. It, like, made perfect sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to open up the mod can, you know, that whole can of worms, how many games have been modded to have Star Trek stuff in them? That's like a whole nother show or two.
That might be. Well, we can talk a little about it, I guess.
Yeah, it's just like, it's too big of a list for me to hold in my head.
But so, I feel kind of bad. I don't know why I missed Birth of the Federation. Like, that sounds like a game I would totally play. But for some reason, maybe the reviews were too lukewarm, or maybe the box didn't look great. I don't know. I skipped it.
Well, it also came out about the same time as Starfleet Command, and maybe that distracted you.
Well, Starfleet, that game. I spent so much time with that game. And all single player, again, because I'm not much of a multiplayer person. But
I was in a league.
Really?
With that one. So, yep.
Wow.
Yep, every Tuesday and Thursday night.
Really?
So,
and was this over dial? Yeah, was this over dial up?
No, I had a cable modem back.
Oh, really?
Then. When was this? Like 2000?
99-ish, 2000-ish.
99, 2000? Yeah, I had, cuz I lived pretty close to Akron. And Akron was the first place that they rolled out Roadrunner.
Oh, so really?
I got it. Yeah. We used to be in Roadrunner Clan, actually, is what they call it, the Quake Clan that we were in. And and I remember that we had, like, fought Clan PMS, and they had cable rooms too, right? And what was funny is I went to E3, and I hung out with some of the girls that were from PMS. And it was Muddy Mud Skipper, and I just knew her as that, right? Little did I know that it was actually Asia Carrera. Like, I found out months later.
I don't know who that is.
I was like, yeah, and your girlfriend's probably happy that you don't know who that is. So, it's good.
But Starfleet Command, I swear, that game just blew my mind. It's still such a great game. Even though the second one is better, I still load up the gold edition of the first one every now and again because, you know, different content. But that and its sequel, Starfleet Command 1 and 2, just were really the best kind of Trek game you can get. Because it wasn't all about shooting. You had scientific missions. You had diplomatic missions. You know, you had exploration.
Yeah, and the combat itself was very technical.
Yeah, it was.
It was
very naval. It was perfect because it was.
Yeah,
it was,
I remember trying to turn. You know, you're trying to turn so you can get the one shield that's still up between you and the enemy as you're trying to warp yourself over to the border before he destroys you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very technical. Very tactical. Very satisfying. And there, I submit that some of the finest tactical space gaming you could find.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think it's been beat, really. I mean, maybe Nexus, but no, not really. I don't think, no.
Yeah, for single player or you know, for something that is an official Star Trek property, I think that series wins my best award.
I agree. I think it's the pinnacle of Star Trek gaming. No, because it covers so much ground. It covers, you know, all these different races, and they feel all different. Like, their ships feel different. They have these racial bonuses things, you know, that make them feel unique. And the ships feel different, and the combat was just absolutely fantastic.
Well, we should just reinstall Orion Pirates and drag you kicking and screaming online.
I actually have it installed right now because I never owned Orion Pirates. And then Deslock, you guys know him. He was doing an eBay sale to support some game, and so I bought it off him a couple months ago. And I've been playing it here and there, and it's just still so wonderful. Even the graphics still hold up, even though it's 11, 12 years after this one.
Yeah.
But the gameplay is still top notch.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've still got those in a folder on my shelf. So if we can get them to work on the 21st century internet, I'm game.
Oh, yeah. Really? Ooh. Oh, really?
Hey, so what was up with in 99, after Birth of the Federation, they came out with Hidden Evil.
Oh, that was another adventure game. I think I played that one. Let me take a look. I remember that one very vividly. Yes, that was some kind of weird adventure, and that's Activision. Yeah, that was an adventure game.
Yeah, a third-person action-adventure in the same style as Resident Evil. Oh, God. That's why they called it the Hidden Evil.
Yeah, it's...
Because it was Trek, the Resident
Evil. It tried to be scary, but Trek it's hard for Trek to be scary, I think, a lot of times, because it's just too clean a universe. I mean, DS9, I think, did the best because part of the universe is more dirty. It's nowhere near as clean as the nice starship.
Well, it says here, you take on the role of Ensign Sovok, a human raised by Vulcans.
Yeah.
And you're assigned Captain Picard. I think just a human raised by Vulcans, that would be so much mental anguish right there.
God, I remember this game. I don't think I finished it because it wasn't great. It wasn't bad.
Because it was too scary.
No, it wasn't really that scary.
It was like Dead Space.
Well, you also got to think, there was so much crap coming out in 99 that just wasn't even Star Trek games. There was just, 99 was like one of the last big hurrahs for PC gaming. There was so much stuff coming out in 99. And for someone with a short attention span and like me and doesn't mind spending every cent he has in computer games, there was just, I couldn't focus on anything for too long, maybe except Starfleet Command. But yeah, I didn't spend too much time with Hidden Evil, but I do remember Hidden Evil.
And so then there's the game that we were supposed to get that year, which was Secret of Vulcan Fury. And it was going to be a fully 3D rendered
original
series.
Which I was so excited about.
Yeah, they had already done the voice work on it. Yeah. And then I think it just, their design was so ambitious that they realized they just couldn't do it on any kind of decent budget.
Yeah, I'm looking at the screenshots. It's still gorgeous. It's still,
Well, you know, the thing is, they could take the audio, and with today's CG, they could render the actors as they were, in their prime, and just knock an episode out. That would be like a lost episode
No one's gonna do that.
Well, there was a proposal a while back to get the audio and do an animated series style show using that
really?
Audio.
Oh, but, I vaguely remember that, yeah.
But I don't think they were able to get it together.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at the arc, right, as I look down the list, and these are all the canon games, right? So there was 3 in 99, and then in 2000 there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games, and then 2001 had 1, 2, 3, 4, had 4. There was 2 in 02, 1 in 03... one in 2006, which was Legacy, kind of came out of nowhere, and then nothing until the 2009 movie. So it seems like Star Trek license-wise hit critical mass in 2000. In 2000 and 2001, it just burned itself out and went up in a blaze.
There were a lot of games in 2000, 2001. Let's see, you had Elite Force, which was surprisingly excellent.
Yeah, there's the both Armadas.
Yeah.
There's Star Trek Conquest Online, which unfortunately title crosses with a Wii game, so all my searches for video came up with the Wii stuff. But it was actually an online kind of a 4X game.
Really?
But it was online only. Yeah.
It was a 4X and then, game.
Yep. And then there was
the box shot made it look like a board game. That's why I didn't even bother.
Well, it's kind of 4X-y. Like board game. It's basically Star Trek chess. Like, remember Battle Chess?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I think it's pretty easy to see why 2002 brought the beginning of the end. Star Trek Nemesis.
Ugh.
Oh.
Which I still haven't seen.
That was the franchise killer.
I heard it was terrible.
So bad.
And then for that, they took Tom Hardy and threw him in a pit in the desert.
Really?
Where...
In 2000,
until he came out and fought Batman.
In 2000, you also had Starfleet Command 2, which was amazing. And
Hey, so this Star Trek Conquest Online is basically, they show the box art. It's a chessboard with John DeLancey as Q.
That's what I'm saying. It looked like a board game, which made me have no interest whatsoever.
Yeah, it was like you look at it and you're like, oh god, John DeLancey, you keep walking. the Q curse. Because it was Q and Borg and time travel.
Next generation degenerated
into.
Really?
Yeah, man.
But what else do you...
So they don't really say much about... There's no trivia. There's not really much of a... It says the description is, Q, you decided that humans and their universe is merely items to be collected, and you will play this collection game against other Q players. Create special collections, in parentheses, decks... based on your basic and advanced pieces, which are based on famous Star Trek objects.
What?
It's like a collectible card game.
Oh.
Utilize the special abilities of the piece to attack and defend regions of space, win and lose pieces, and hopefully emerge victorious.
Okay, stop.
Registration online.
That's enough.
Gives you access to the matchmaking service where you can play against other
suckers. I'm
pretty sure that description took longer than most people spent playing the game.
That's more than that's longer than I wanted to hear about the game.
Gosh.
Oh, God, that's a mouthful.
If Flash had not been invented after that, that would have been a Flash game, I think.
Yeah, 2000 was surprisingly awesome and awful because you had Elite Force, you had Starfleet Command 2, and then you had New Worlds, which was terrible, and then you had Starship Creator 2, which was terrible. Which I played.
I didn't like the Armada games much either.
I thought they were okay. I haven't played the second one too much, but
the second one and the first one are essentially the same game.
Really?
The single player scenarios changed a lot. Yeah, but it's all about Borg, right?
Oh.
And it's basically instead of Zerg Rush, it's Borg Rush, and you know. But it came out at the height of StarCraft happiness, right? And it was just like we have got to shoehorn this Star Trek license into StarCraft.
Well, let's talk about Elite Force for a second because I hated Voyager by this time, couldn't stand it. But that game was awesome. That and its sequel were really, really good.
Well, Raven just knows how to make a hallway shooter.
Well, yeah, that is true. But they actually made me care more about Voyager than the show did.
Yeah, I'll agree to that. Like, there was more going on in the game to give a damn about.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
And they were great shooters. They just felt right for a Star Trek shooter.
Talking about you had always wanted the experience of being able to just walk around the ship.
Yeah, apparently.
Right? And not have any.
Apparently you could do that in the second one with an expansion pack, which I never played, sadly.
Yeah, it's just fully, like, just walk around the ship, you know, knock yourself out.
To dig that. I have to find that. I have to find that somewhere. That sounds amazing. But, yeah, 2001. What did you have in 2001? Let's see. At Orion Pirates. That's great. Did you guys play Dominion Wars? I didn't play that one at all.
Dominion Wars looks kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I was not a big fan of Deep Space Nine at the time.
I wasn't either.
I was just like, eh.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I was like, Deep Space Nine, whatever. It sucks. But no.
And I was heavily into Starfleet Command. And Orion Pirates came out like the same month, I think, as that. The unfortunate Star Trek XCOM Away Team.
You know what?
Came out.
I liked Away Team. I did.
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed that one.
That one fits right in with the, hey, this feels like XCOM with Star Trek, but I'd rather be playing XCOM.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
it was also, instead of being turn-based, it was a real-time, pausable hybrid thing, which is kind of the same mistake that they made with XCOM in the end.
Yeah, with 3.
Yeah. So.
But, I liked Away Team, and I need to play more Armada 2, because it looks fun, but I kind of want to try and dig up Dominion Wars. Now that I'm all, oh my god, Deep Space Nine's amazing.
Well, in Dominion Wars, you could fly around in a Galaxy class starship. I mean, it wasn't just Deep Space Nine stuff. It didn't feel good.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was trying to be a sort of a third person starship simulator, but the control, the pacing of it, it wasn't terrible, but I played it probably 3 or 4 hours and walked away.
Did you get to fly the Defiant?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So.
Oh yeah.
So
definitely.
That's my favorite Star Trek.
I just found it on an Abandonware site, so I can hook you.
Okay. I'd rather buy it, but yeah, let's do that too, maybe. I don't officially condone that, but yes, Jim, let's.
Well, if there's nowhere to get it, like. Hint, put it on Good Games.
Yes, yes.
For some reason, my headset keeps cutting out when Jim's talking about certain things, and I'm not hearing this stuff. I don't know what's going on.
You need a better headset, man. But yeah, I kind of want to try that one now. But Way Team wasn't bad, Armada 2, apparently. But then you had Starfleet Command 3 in 2002, which it wasn't great. It wasn't great at all.
I don't know.
Yeah, it just didn't feel right at all. It didn't feel right at all compared to 1 and 2. 1 and 2 just felt pitch perfect, you know? 3 just felt...
Yeah. Well, you're talking about Starfleet Command?
Starfleet Command 3, which used the next gen.
Yeah, well, it was the next gen license. Yeah. That's what murdered
Which
it.
I thought I'd be excited about because I love next gen ships just as much as...
No, but they changed a bunch of stuff. They, like you went from 6 shield facings to 4.
Yeah, they made it more streamlined or something. And it was like, no, this is not what I play Starfleet Command for. Thank you very much.
it's a thing, too, that... The next generation ships, they don't have discrete phaser arcs, right? You have that ring that goes around the whole thing, so it's an omnidirectional phaser that can just, you know, magically shoot anywhere. Mm-hmm. So if they even stick to the canon, it kind of breaks the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of the fault of the actual universe just as much as anything else there.
Now, what was the Nemesis game? Did you guys play that at all?
That was a phone game.
It was a phone game?
Yeah.
Because these screenshots do not look like a phone game.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of the other one. There was a Nemesis game that was one of the like really early WAP games. Oh, no, this one.
I don't know. This was a phone game.
Yeah, look how tiny those screens are. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been on a phone. That looks stupid.
Yeah.
It's really stupid.
Hey, speaking of phone games, what is that game that they have? It's called Star Team. That's it. Where everybody's iPhone, it'll print out fans, and you have to yell to the other people.
It's kind of like Artemis with multiple iPhones. Yes.
Yeah, Space Team.
Yeah, Space Team.
Apparently,
yeah.
That's also a lot of fun.
Yeah, that one is just a chance to run around and yell Starship-y terminology at each other, though. It's not really a full game like Artemis is.
But 2002 also brought us Bridge Commander, which, totally games. What the hell?
Well, you know, as far as a last hurrah for Totally Games, not so bad.
It's not their last hurrah.
There's two.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you don't bring up secret weapons over.
No, I'm bringing up that rodeo game they did a few years ago.
Oh, yes.
That's what I'm bringing up. But no.
Star Wars Imperial Rodeo.
Yeah, no, but Bridge Commander, I thought I'd be able to, maybe get up and look around the bridge, maybe walk around the ship, but no,
that's another one where it was originally going to be in there, and I think to get it out, they made the whole thing third person, so a Star Trek. I still had fun with it. I played through the campaign on it.
It was.
So they have patches out for this thing.
Oh no,
now,
it's modded to right? hell. It, yeah, no, that's all
yeah,
kinds of mods.
That brings it up to I fired it up, because I still got my original CD, and then I downloaded a gig and a half a patch that goes on top of it, and then I it's like the ultimate something something edition, ultimate warp edition or something. But anyway, I fired that up, and it was just like, wow, this thing looks like about a 2010 game now. You know, it really gave the thing a crazy facelift. The gameplay is essentially still the same. And I guess, a lot of the bulk of that download size is a bunch of new ships and content that they put in that's multiplayer only. Oh. So I didn't see that in the campaign. But yeah, it still holds up pretty well. I was playing it yesterday.
Huh. There's a fan mod that they're working on for Bridge Commander 2. There's a guy, he's got a Facebook page where he's got a bunch of screenshots and stuff. He's actually working on an unofficial sequel to it.
Oh, if you could send me that link, if you know where it is.
Yeah, it's on the Trek Core list up at 2012, but it didn't actually. Yep.
Oh, I see it. Okay, thank you very much. Wow, that'd be cool. Bridge Commander 2. Yeah, okay, great.
Bridge Commander is another one of those games that your expectations from the name and the idea were so high, and it didn't
work. But especially with Totally Games behind it, you know? Yeah. Especially that. That was just such a...
Well, the thing that I didn't dig, there was two different levels of quality that were going on. There was the things that happened in space, right? And then the things that happened inside the ship. And it looked like almost two different development teams created these things and then welded them together in some unholy matrimony. Where the people on the ship were like these nasty puppets that they were about Half-Life 1 era of skeletal animation. So their jaws would flop up and down like Muppets, badly lip-sync.
Yeah.
That was pretty terrible. It was basically they had like a static model of a head, right? And then the texture that was there for the mouth and eyes, they would just swap them. And it was like South Park. Kind of like flapping 2D face on a 3D model. Terrible.
Yeah, that was not a good era for lip sync.
No, it's very bad. But I think as far as the narrative of the game goes, and you know, it's like, hey, you have a galaxy class ship, and you know, go out there and wreck some stuff. That was kind of all right. I thought the campaign was diplomatic enough. That it wasn't just like go out and, you know, we're playing TIE Fighter in this big giant Enterprise.
Now, the combat felt decent.
The ship had some weight to it, and you had to think about weapon arcs.
Yeah, that was nuts. I thought the combat stuff was probably the best stuff in that game, I thought.
Yeah, oh, definitely. That was the only part I really liked.
Right. Yeah, that was the only good part, really. And then I guess the last hurrah was Elite Force 2, I guess. Yeah. Which
Legacy.
I don't remember playing. I don't remember playing.
Legacy was not a bad game. Legacy was not a good game. But Legacy was not bad.
What exactly? I always get that one confused. What exactly is that one again?
Well, the campaign structure is basically that you do some missions in the NX-01, you know, the Enterprise. You do some things there. That's a few story things, and then you jump into the Wrath of Khan era with Kirk and you know, you shoot up some Klingons, and then they do some things in Next Generation, and then in Voyager, and then some Deep Space Nine.
Huh.
So you get just a taste of each timeline along the way.
Yeah.
And there were even some cool shots of ships like in between too in a couple of the missions, but it didn't feel right. The combat just didn't feel Star Trek-y to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it was like I have a situational awareness problem in that game. It's almost like imagine playing Bridge Commander, but all of your shield status and stuff is really abstracted away from you. So it's like instead of having these shield facings and stuff, you just have somebody yell out like the right side shields are down, you know, or whatever. And you have a health bar and it's like, okay, well, you know, but some things were done kind of right. But it was a thing, it was because it was primarily a console release, and then the PC version was a port, it was done with a game controller in mind. So, you know, and you know how that kind of goes whenever you take something that demands a little bit of control fidelity, and then you try to put it on a D-pad, and they did okay with what they had, though. I mean, if I was playing it on an Xbox, I wouldn't feel offended about some of the simplifications.
I don't know. I did play it on the Xbox and it just didn't grab me. But the weirdest thing about that game is that it's from Bethesda.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Going
a little off their normal book there.
Going quite a lot off their normal book.
Well, maybe with the new universe, maybe they'll license it out to Gearbox. We'll have something to fear.
But then, yeah, after that, there wasn't really much until that DAC game from 2009? What the hell was that?
Let's move on from that one.
What is...
Oh, no. DAC is subspace.
Oh, yeah. Really?
I mean, just to look at it, it is Subspace.
Here, let me see.
The old, like, freeware game.
Oh, my God, it is.
Yeah, it's top-down, shoot at other ships.
What?
I thought it was pretty fascinating that Blue Fire actually comes out of the nacelles of the Enterprise like they're rockets.
What?
That told me it was going to be technically accurate.
Oh, man.
Hey, that's canon. If you ever look at the old Gold Key Star Trek comics from the 1970s, and the artists apparently were not required to watch the show, because you see the Enterprise flying around with red flames coming out the back of the nacelles.
Oh, God. Wow, this looks pretty terrible. Okay, I'm glad
your old self would never read those.
This DAC game looks pretty terrible. I'm glad I never played it. Okay. Moving on from that. Yeah, like you said, Denny. Star Trek Online. Yep. What a waste of potential that game is.
It's kind of like, let's see if we can take the next generation and make it boring.
That they did. Because, yeah, let's give you an exploration mission where we tell you exactly what's happening and we know exactly what's going to happen in this part of space that we've already...
Well, the space stuff, not so bad. Not great. Not so bad. But the away team mission stuff that they force you to do, like I was playing it today, right? Trying to
get
in the proper mind frame to do this thing tonight. And I boot this thing up, and I'm playing, like, in the starter ship, and I'd put in maybe 5 hours into it before, right? So I'm on this mission where there's a ship, and it's got some kind of reactor problem, and we have to go, and I have to pick, you know, an away team. So I pick, like, five guys, and we're going to go over there and save these people in the ship. So it's not a, hey, we're going to jump in and just fight a bunch of orcs. I'm sorry, Klingons, and, you know, in this MMO. But I'm standing there trying to work on a console, and the other four people in the away team are running around like the Keystone Cops, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like watching a planetary or what do I want to call that? A solar system thing. What are those called?
The planetarium, I believe you're talking.
Yeah, the little desktop version of right where it's like everything turns and then things orbit things and that's kind of how it is with footstep noise, right? So it sounds like a centipede wearing wooden clogs running around in the room and these people are just running around and bashing into walls and stuff. And it's just like, just stop. I'm just trying to hack this console. I just have to hold the key down. Okay. Clump, 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 clump. And then like, bad guys, I think it was Orion's, like, beam into the room, and then I have to shoot a bunch of Orion guys, and then you go to the console, and it takes the radiation out of the hallway, right? And then you go to the next room, and rinse, repeat, shoot some Orions, take the radiation out of the next chunk of hallway, and then you get to the end, and there's, like, two crewmen, and you have to escort them back to the transporter pad, which is on the other side of the ship where you came from. So you're wrecking Orions the whole way back. And then you get into the ship, and it's like, congratulations. Oh, now there's Orion ships, and we must shoot them. So then I had to kill off, like, two regular Orion, like, cruisers and kill a battleship with my little frigate. I thought that I was pretty powerful at the end of that.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, and the whole time that I'm doing this, and you would think, like, there's all this combat going on, and I finally get to do some starship combat, and I should be, like, excited about that. Right. And I'm just looking at it like, when's this going to end?
Yeah.
Like, why has it taken me so long to kill this thing? This is not exciting. I could just have a nap. Like, let me just tape this key down and go make a sandwich.
Yeah, you know, I probably would play that game if you could just be a starship captain and fly around in space and do the space combat stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not Jim Kirk. I'm not leaving the bridge. I'm the captain. Just let me have my damn ship. But no, without that option, I'm just not an MMO guy.
I'm not really either. I mean, I've played that, and I've played Eve. It's like, I was with Jumpgate, but that's a different story. But I guess now that brings us to the 2013 game, which we have already talked about, and wow, sad.
Yeah, the 2013 game just made me wonder if I'm a jaded shell of a gamer, and I should just out of the hobby.
No, the reviews I've read have been overwhelmingly negative.
Yeah, but check the forum posts on it. And you'll see a
lot
of people.
No, I haven't. I haven't.
It's one of those games that has all the triggers that reviewers like to harp on, you know, as they're looking at their laundry list of things to bitch about in every review. Having been one of those guys myself, I know all about this. And I knew it wasn't going to get good reviews when I played it. But if you go look at Quarter to Three and some of the other boards, you're going to find a lot of people who are Star Trek fans found that the Trekness of it in the story made it worth playing. And, you know, play it like Jim. Put it on easy and enjoy the story. The combat's not going to challenge you too badly on easy. And
I thought it did some interesting things. Like the Gorn are no longer like these slow walking zombie lizard things, you know, that take like 10 minutes to shuffle. That's probably the most exciting combat that's ever been in Star Trek. Right. Yeah. And I loved the commercial that they did. Yeah, honestly, the best thing that happened in connection to this video game is when they got Shatner and the Gorn sitting on the couch.
That was brilliant. Yeah.
That was a great commercial. I did love that.
Yeah, but I kind of thought it was very interesting the way the JJ verse has rebooted the Gorn, and I hope that's canon. I would assume that it is. But it's just like, oh, now they're kind of like a little more like velociraptors with intelligence. Although I was disappointed that they don't have feathers because it's technically inaccurate. they should have some feathers.
Really?
Oh God, how pissed off would people be? If they had, because there was all that debate that was going on about the Jurassic Park movies, and I guess they've got another one coming, and they were saying, well, no, even though that we now know that the velociraptors did have feathers, we're going to stay consistent with the other two movies. And like people were just like, oh my God, science, you know, freaking out. So how much would people be like calling for J.J. Abrams' head if he had the Gorn actually have like a full, they were like feathered Wookiees?
If it was awesome enough, I don't think I'd have a problem with it. But
yeah, they would be space parrots, the Orion parrots.
So it's just amazing how this series has had some fantastic highs, but I think it's had more lows. Honestly,
I think my judgment is 'tis better to watch the Trek than play the Trek. So, unless it's an unofficial fan made mod, which case it might kick ass.
For three of the shows, I'll agree with you. And maybe four of the movies.
All right. Now, here's the big question, though. Which series of games had the best, like, good game to bad game ratio? Star Trek or Star Wars?
Probably Star Trek.
Ooh, man. And we so recently did that master list of LucasArts trash, too.
There have been fewer Star Wars games, I think, though. So it's kind of hard to say. But there were some really terrible Star Wars games.
Yeah,
like that Gungan Bombad Racing one and the Pit Droids.
Oh, Bombad Racing! Yes. No, dude, Bombad Racing is surprisingly great. Have you seen it?
It looks terrible.
It's Mario Kart with Star Wars.
What? Games. How can that be good,
dude? How can it not? I mean, really, it threw all give a shit out the window and just said,
"No fucks were given in the making of that game."
Exactly right. It's like. It's like instead of throwing a turtle shell, they like toss like a greased Gungan ear out. I don't know. It's
what? Oh my God!
Yeah, dude, just look up a video on YouTube and you'll laugh till you cry, and then you'll just.
But then
cry.
You also had for Star Wars, you had I guess Pit Droids and the Battle of Naboo and
Yoda any of stories.
I like Yoda stories. I did.
Yeah, don't pick on Yoda stories.
I like that game. But no, you had all the prequel tie-in games, which are apparently terrible.
Yeah,
that horrible puzzle game. What was it called? Oh yeah, X-Wing.
You know, when we did that show, we mentioned you by name on that show, and I was like, you know, Denny can't be here, but in spirit, he wants everyone to know that X-Wing was a terrible puzzle game.
You know what? You're not as much as I love X-Wing. You're not wrong. You're really not wrong.
No, and Alliance made that same mistake. It's like they got it right with TIE Fighter, and then they screwed it up because much like Lucas, they didn't understand what they did right.
Yeah, they did get it right with TIE Fighter. I'm going through that.
Yeah.
Oh, they got so much right with it. But
if they would just go back and make the Ewoks blink.
But Denny, I think with your question, I think with the best to worst ratio, I think it's probably Star Trek. Maybe just because there are more games. And there are more horrible games for Star Trek. They didn't make a Star Wars game show game. I don't think they, did. Or there wasn't a game where you could build a Star Destroyer and then send it out on terribly barely scripted missions.
Yeah, but there's
that was actually Star Wars Galaxies.
What?
And they but that was the thing that, was missing was having capital ships. They had like some barges that you could have as a guild hall, but it wasn't great.
There's also no Star Trek game where you can dance with the crew though, like there is in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's right. There was no official canon prostitution in a Star Trek game. Because that's basically what it was. It was Twi'lek prostitution in the cantina.
What is this from?
from Star Wars Galaxies, because chicks would get in there stripped down to their underwear.
What?
They had those two ghastly songs that would play whenever somebody got their space flute out, and they would like dance on the table, and people would just pitch money at them, and that was how people made money in the game.
Dear God. Wow. So okay. So
and that's not the only dancing in Star Wars. There's also in Kinect Star Wars.
Dancing. Oh yes.
And oh, let me tell you one thing that Jim didn't explain to you, Brian, is that there is actually a workable explanation for why that's in the game.
Okay. Well, I would like to hear this, please.
they found records of these. These are like old tapes. And they had to reconstruct them with the computer. And some of the characters were replaced with others, and the history was not exactly accurate. So,
wait, what game are you talking
about? This is Kinect Star Wars.
So, going down the holocron route?
The dance sequence. You know, these were like holographic records, and they weren't fully clear, so the computer substituted in some other people. And it's like, did you ever have the old Star Trek technical manual from the 70s?
Oh, of course I did,
You open it up, and you look at the tricorder, and it's full of transistors.
Yeah.
And there was an explanation in the beginning of the manual that when this thing accidentally got transmitted back to the 1970s, they went back and altered the records so that it would be modern technology, so that no time travel secrets would be. Same kind of distortion.
So that explains why they had Holoback Girl in there. Was Hologram Girl.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Mm.
Yeah, it's all a computer glitch. So,
because that's actually where we ended the LucasArts show. Was I pulled that very game. I think it was the Emperor and Vader dancing, you know, their square dance, right? And at that and the Han Solo scene where he was in the carbonite. That's how we ended that. Is I just passed those links
I'm
to Brian
scarred.
And put him in such a state of shock and pain that he could not continue.
They're burned into my retinas. I can't not see the trash compactor. I can't not see it. Oh, my God. Whenever I close my eyes. Oh, my God.
But, you know, part of me does want that official R2-D2 skinned Xbox.
Oh, that thing's just awesome. Saying. You know what makes R2 noises when you turn it on and eject the disc and everything?
I really shouldn't know that.
Wait, this exists? Really cool. There's an R2-D2? Yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Why am I not surprised there was an Android R2-D2 phone on Verizon, so I shouldn't be surprised by that.
And the controller is gold with wires, and it looks like C-3PO.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Or part of C-3PO.
Yeah. Like it was made from part of C-3PO.
Why isn't there a Star Trek Xbox? You'd think that would work. It would look like, you know, the controller would look like a big tricorder, and the console...
Do you know why? Because Star Trek has never had a merchandising mastermind like George Lucas, and now... Mickey Mouse.
Mm.
That's why.
I mean, there's a lot of Star Trek merchandise, but you might be right.
So Paramount, does Paramount still own Star Trek full on?
Yeah.
Or
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So I just wonder, I wish, like, we've been through, you know, this whole list of stuff, and I'm thinking now that JJ has done this, and I'm kind of sad that this game is kind of as lukewarm as it is. Mm. It's not good enough to be great, but it's not bad enough to be bad. I think Aliens Colonial Marines coming out a month ago only helps it.
Wow.
You know, but it's, you know, because everybody can say, well, it's not that. So, you know, But I have noticed, like, people are rabid about bug hunting in it. You know, it's just like, oh, look, we see these silly glitches that are in here. And it's like, yeah, any game's got glitches if you make it glitch for YouTube, yeah. Right? But it's just like, there's nothing that's totally abysmal there. You know, and it's okay. From what I heard, the co-op on PC didn't quite work at launch. I don't know if they've ironed that out with a patch yet or not. On the consoles, apparently, it was okay.
I did see some screenshots with some horrible clipping problems.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen that in actual gameplay, though.
Okay.
Well, and I think that's just people trying to get upvotes, right? Is this like, if you abuse the thing long enough and hard enough and then take a screenshot when you get cake, right? So,
well, you guys have not convinced me to not buy this on a sale, because that's the only time.
Oh, I would definitely, if it was... I'd put my price point at $15.
Okay, yeah.
If it was 15 or lower.
You fit the demographic, Brian. You know, you're a fan. I think you'll enjoy it.
Well, like I said,
but I would not go a dime over 20.
No, I'm going to wait for a Steam sale when it comes down to like $10 or $15.
Do you have an Xbox? That's where it's going to hit the bargain bin fastest, I think.
No.
It's going to be on a console.
I have a PS3.
Well, even there, it's on the PS3. Mm. It'll end up in the like, I don't know, 1995 or 1799 or whatever.
The problem
wherever
is,
GameStop
I don't
parks
think this deserves
things.
To be owned on physical media.
No, because you don't want actual physical evidence.
I don't think I want an actual physical.
Do you want me to be like your Star Trek porn buddy? Like, if you get hit by a bus, I'll come over to your house and sneak in and like burn all your shitty games. Like, nobody will know.
Yeah, burn my copy of Avengers and my copy of of Warwind and all these old games. Like, why the fuck did he own these? But
I want to be buried with a copy of Descent to Undermountain.
Oh God, that's wrong with you?
Just so that I know that I took one with me.
Oh jeez.
Oh God.
Did you ever play
no.
that?
No. Why?
Oh, God.
No.
I had to sit with a straight face while the producer came and demoed it for me at Computer Gaming World.
Oh, my God. I couldn't have kept my mouth shut on that was one. Because it still is the worst game that I ever
touched. I was
going
to just ask, was it as bad as I've heard? It sounds like it was.
Well, back in that day, you could actually go back to... It wasn't GameStop then. It was whatever they were called back then, Babbage's. And you could actually like throw a game down on the counter and be like, "This sucks. I want a refund."
Yeah.
And I did it.
Wow.
For that game, I did it.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was like really bad.
Well,
super bad.
Did they sell that on GOG?
I don't think so.
Remember the skeletons in that game? How they looked?
Yeah. Well, I remember that they had like horned helmets on or something, and they were just terrible. But yeah. it was oof, God. Hey, speaking of though, I was playing Neverwinter. Have you messed with it?
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's in open beta right now. Which it's Cryptic, so the same people that made Star Trek Online. And
that might not be a good thing. I don't know if that's.
I know. I went into it a little bit hesitant about that. And a buddy of mine, he actually did all of the user interface stuff for Champions, which it's really hard when you hate a game that your friend helped make. And it's just like, well, I have to be politically correct and just say, it's okay.
Well, like,
the parts that you made,
I can tell you guys that Descent to Undermountain is not on GOG.
Oh, good.
I thought it was some reason.
But anyway, he did that game. He did parts of Star Trek, and then they were working on Neverwinter whenever he left. And you know, he's moved on to Green
Neverwinter Nights.
Now.
Whenever I hear that name,
it is.
Oh,
it's not the it's the same world.
Oh.
and everything. But what's interesting about that is, have you looked at the fourth edition rules for D&D? They basically shoehorned in World of Warcraft into D&D. It's like your abilities are, you could basically take a character and put their abilities on a hot bar on your character sheet, what? Right? And just be like, yeah, I get to do this one every X number of rounds, and I can do this one once per encounter, and I can do this one whatever. And I'm playing the game, and I'm I'm looking at the stats for my spells and things that I have, and they're listed of like once per encounter, once per day, once per whatever. And I realize like, oh my God, this is an actual literal translation from the book to the screen. They didn't really have to mod the rules to make it work in a computer game.
Hello?
Yeah. Oh. It's like straight out of the book.
Oh.
And I find that very interesting because their player base now has moved on from the tabletop grognards to probably people who primarily get their role playing fix off of a computer screen and then get around the kitchen table as, you know, an interesting off thing to do.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, so they backported the computer game into the physical book.
Mm.
So, and a lot of people hate it for that, but I looked at it and I was like, that's kind of innovative because I've sat around the kitchen table and tried to resolve combat for like 2 hours one time, you know, because the rules were so burdensome in second edition. Right. And it was just like, you know, this is okay. Like, roll some dice, get it over with. All right. So, yeah, I can deal with it.
I'm too busy trying to slog through Star Drive, which is, yeah. You know, not awesome. It's not, people. It's just not awesome.
So it's a game that they haven't patched in the fun yet?
There is some fun. I had a little more fun last night because I was declared war on twice, which is going to be in my next review installment. So that was kind of fun. But it still feels empty. It's like I think Distant Worlds has spoiled me. That's my problem. Distant Worlds has totally spoiled me.
Is there a Star Trek mod for Distant
there
Worlds?
There is. It's a next-gen mod, and it's amazing. And it's fantastic. It's really, really good. They've got like they've got like 8 races or something, and all the ships and tons of pictures. And yeah, it's great. That's the beauty of those top down, you know, those simple graphic top down space games. You can do that much easier than you could with 3D nonsense.
Yep. So, Dennis, given a choice of you could have a AAA game come out that would get like a perfect 10 review, would you have it in Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek in a second.
Why so?
I'm just a much bigger fan of the Trek universe. It comes from having grown up with the original series, I think. It's just, I'm closer to it. And also, the Star Trek universe is more coherent. It makes more sense.
It also has a lot more potential.
Yeah. And if you're going to make a game about it, you know, having a universe that has rules that make sense instead of midichlorians.
Or magic.
I was wondering how long it would take before the Force's germs popped up.
Yeah.
Well, it's basically a fantasy. Star Wars is basically fantasy in a sci-fi wrapper. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the 3 Star Wars movies they made, but but I just like Star Trek better.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you, Danny. I mean, Star Trek is what got me into spaceships and space stuff. I first saw the Enterprise on TV when I was 4, and I was done.
Yeah, my dad used to watch Star Trek with me on Saturday afternoons, you know, when it was in syndication back in the early 70s. That's kind of neat. That's one of the things that, you know, he and I don't really talk too much anymore, but that's like one of the fond memory things was sitting watching that with him. So, and then, you know, it was about Star Trek and Godzilla, and then Star Wars came third to the picture, right? Yeah. But it's... I think we live in a pretty great age where the things that I was into back then in the 70s have absolutely come full circle in one summer, right? So we're going to have a Star Trek movie. I was big time into Johnny Sacco and his giant robot.
Ah, right? Pacific Rim.
Oh, my God, we're getting Pacific Rim.
Amazing.
And Godzilla movies and all that. And then, you know, new Star Wars is hot on the way. And I think people, the reviews that the new Trek movie is getting is people are actually saying, like, there's one thing in particular about it that people are a little bit like, eh, but I can't discuss that without completely dumping a spoiler bucket, so I won't do that. But it's just people are saying, well, I wish he hadn't have done this and he'd done something, you know, that was unrelated to things that we know about. So, yeah, so it's just a thing of like, I can't bitch about it without spoiling.
Well, then
so I'll just dodge that. Yeah, I'm just saying, I'll just dodge that. But you'll see it in a couple weeks, and you'll know exactly
I'm
what I'm talking
excited.
About.
Well,
so it's just like, had it been somebody else's to do again, then maybe tweak that story a little bit, and everything would have been perfection, right? So So that's a thing.
Well, if you've got a Star Trek movie where there's only one plot element that you can really bitch about, that's doing pretty good.
That's yeah.
Yeah, honestly.
It's not bad.
And it's a thing where a lot of the cerebral stuff that people complained about in the first Trek movie not being there, it was like, well, this is like a guns blazing action movie kind of thing. And this one kind of does that, but there's also a lot of character development and conversations that make people make tough decisions, where there wasn't a lot of tough decision making in the first one.
Right.
So that's kind of it's interesting. So they're into more of a cerebral thing, whereas Star Wars is just kind of like, hey, there's a big space station, we have to blow it up. It's bad guys, right? And it's very black and white.
Yeah, I'm going to be really curious to see what kind of Star Wars movies we get with one coming out a year.
Well, you know, that's going to be kind of weird too, because the Star Wars stuff, aren't they going with like a young, God, it's almost going to be like young Indiana Jones, right? Where they're going to go back and do like a young Han Solo movie with somebody else, of course, playing Han Solo.
What? Yeah, that's the rumor. I think the next one is going to be a follow-on to Jedi. And then they're going to start going back and doing like early looks at the characters and things like that.
What?
That's what the interwebs tell us, and they wouldn't lie.
What?
Well, but what I understood it to be was it was going to be like a once every 3 years rotation for the next trilogy, but then interspersed with that, they were going to let other directors do like basically features about like, well, this one's going to be about Boba Fett's lost years, and then this one's going to be about like Han Solo and how he met Chewbacca or whatever, right. Which honestly would be a pretty killer story. But I don't know how they make that. See, there's some retcon crap that doesn't jive because of, have you ever read Han Solo at Star's End?
Yes.
And the old books. So it's like he used to be a TIE fighter pilot, and then he defected out of that because he got like a soft spot for, I think it was actually when he rescued Chewbacca, yeah, or whatever exactly the backstory what is for that. Yeah. And it was, you know, it was basically like, well, I can be a dick like the rest of the Empire, or I can set these prisoners free or whatever. So he's got the life debt with Chewie, and that's how that went on. And I would love to see a movie about that. That would be kind of cool. The problem is that Harrison Ford is not one of the clones, right? So are stormtroopers all clones of Boba Fett? And if so, Boba Fett's the baddest ass bounty hunter, or Jango Fett, or whoever, is the best shot, best bounty hunter in the world. How come these clones, are they all defective? Because they can't hit the broadside of a barn.
I don't think the stormtroopers are all clones.
No, I don't think the stormtroopers are supposed to be. Just the those fanfic movies they made back in the 90s.
Oh, that.
Yeah. In those, they were the clones. But in the canon films, no, I think they're just contractors.
Oh, God.
I wonder how JJ is going to dodge that. Just like all those bad things. Like, is it just going to be like, yeah, that never happened?
One can hope.
We shall never speak of it.
Well, I guess we should wrap up on that. We've been talking for, I think, almost 2 hours. This might be our longest podcast. Maybe. But, Danny, I want to thank you for joining what has been a very spirited discussion.
Thank you guys for having me.
On Star Trek, because, yeah, we all love it. So you can tell that, like, we love the highs, and we're like, God damn the lows. And so,
yeah, there's never any hate. There's just I wanted this to be good.
That's how I feel about every space game. I approach every space game like that, and then I'm either excited or disappointed. I want this to be awesome because I love space games. But go ahead.
So in all your years of reviewing, what would you say is the best game that you ever reviewed, and what is the worst game? The thing that made you want to just like quit the whole game of reviewing rather than write that review because you had to finish it.
Gosh, well, no one's ever asked me that. Just off the cuff, I'd probably say finally getting Falcon 4 was probably the highlight for me.
That was such a
Even though the release version had some issues and stuff, it still was just such an amazing simulation, especially given the time that it came out.
Yeah, it was mind blowing.
Didn't they Didn't they take you for an F-16 ride or something as part of the promo?
No, I got to ride an F-15, but that was back when I was working for Omni, the science magazine.
Okay. Because I just remember seeing a picture of you, like, stepping up on an aircraft ladder, and I was like, that lucky bastard.
Yeah, no, I did get to ride in an F-15, but that wasn't related to flight sim stuff, believe it or not. But yeah, no, God, the worst. The worst was probably a game called Gold of the Realm for the Amiga. And the fun mm-hmm. story on that one is I had someone ask me what the worst game I'd ever reviewed was. It was back when GDC was called the Computer Game Developers Conference. And I'm sitting at a dinner with about 8 people, a couple of them I work with, a couple I knew, and a few that I didn't. And the guy asked me, what's the worst game you ever reviewed? I said, Gold of the Realm on the Amiga by far. And he said, well, why? And I just explained how it had no gameplay. You're just walking down hallways collecting coins, and it was completely pointless. And he goes, oh.
And he wrote it.
He said, I did the Amiga port of that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he did the port.
Yeah, he wasn't offended. He was just a contractor. It was apparently, I think it came out on the ST first. And he found the whole thing funny, but it's just like, oh, my God. What are the odds?
Yeah, but was it bad just because it didn't have anything going on, or was it actually soul-crushing?
I had to finish the game to write the review, because you never know if somewhere in hour 20 it's going to get good. And it was completely pointless.
So they dropped that whole stipulation now, right? Now that we have high school kids as the professional game journalism.
Yeah, I think it varies. Like, I think Eurogamer still requires their people to finish them. I think it varies by publication. And realistically by the type of game too, you know, if it's open world.
I would never write a damn review at all if I had to finish a game.
Well, that's what I remember about reviewing games was just murder. It was like, especially around 2000, 2001, when there was just like an avalanche of excellent games that were coming out. Yeah. And then, of course, I reviewed Sims. So you get something like Sub Commander, and it's like, my God, how do you review that end to end? And I also, the market had changed where it used to be, oh, well, I have to do a 600-word review because it's got to fit underneath this giant screenshot on the glossy page, right? Then it was all like, we're going to pay you based on how many words because we have to get as many banner impressions as possible. So if we do like 1,000 words a page, well, we'd need like 3,000 words on this so that we can at least get 3 pages, you know, for review. And then it's just like, oh my God. So I have to write like 3,000 words of this thing and write it well because I couldn't just like barf out something. And then also have played the game to what I would consider completion. But in flight sims and stuff, that's tough, man. Like, how do you actually complete Falcon 4?
Yeah, well, when you've got a campaign like that, you obviously can't ever finish it, but you can play a campaign, you know, a campaign to win or lose, for instance, and then just try a bunch of the different settings, try all the different modes. It was more the story-based games or the mission-based games, and even some. They did a boxed version of Air Warrior back in the late 90s that had a single-player mode, and that thing had hundreds of missions. So in that case, you didn't have to play them all. But if you're playing an adventure game, if you're playing a real-time strategy game, something like that, you know, where there's a clear and reasonable ending, and you may have to put anywhere from 20 to 60 hours in it. It was expected those days.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, I just remember that whole deal of, like, trying to take screenshots, trying to play as much of this game as I could, you know, and it was like, come home from work and like, jump into the game and, you know, play till, like, 2 in the morning and then try to get up again. And then it's like Thursday night before the thing's due the next Monday, and it's just like, oh God, now all weekend long I'm going to do nothing but stare at Microsoft Word. Yeah, those were the good old days.
Yeah, they were. Well, on that note, so, we should probably wrap this up, because I'm falling asleep, and I don't want to do that to you guys. That's rude.
All right, man.
Denny, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a blast having you on, talking about all these great Star Trek games.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's do it again sometime.
We shall. We should. Next time a Star Trek game comes out.
All right.
And Jim, as always, thank you so much for joining us, for co-hosting.
Oh, no problem at all.
Doing this.
I think, honestly, what we ought to do is, if Denny's up to the challenge of compiling a list of fan mods that we should go look at.
Why is it up to him?
That could be the... Because he's the guy that's like in the know about all that stuff. He's the one that's been feeding us links the whole time. It's like I had the stuff from Moby Games, and he's like, "What about these other 1,000 games?"
That might be another good topic to revisit. Star Trek mods. Maybe we should just talk about mods. We haven't talked about mods.
Yeah, just fan projects.
Yeah, that'd be a good topic. Mods.
Fan fiction that doesn't involve midichlorians.
That's happening. We haven't talked about mods yet. All right, guys, but you know, thank you everyone for listening. This is a lot of fun. I'm just kind of I'm losing it right now. This is a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow our RSS feed. Leave us comments. We love comments, especially me. I love comments, and I hope you enjoyed this particularly in-depth look at the history of Star Trek gaming. Thanks, everybody.